refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. And I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problems and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. So the format here at Simple Actions is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize that the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So this evening we're discussing step 12, and I'll first read the paragraph. On page 89, I think we start. And then I have CB and Phyllis to my right, and they are guest speakers from Gloucester tonight. So we're very pleased to have them. And also, before I forget, we are going to have, they're having a meeting of the parishioners, I believe, down the hall. They're having a meeting, and they've asked us specifically to just be respectful when we're in the hallway. And as far as any noisy fellowship, if we can just stay in here or go outside and we can continue to have fellowship and be friendly, but they asked us just to respect the hallways. So I thank you for that. And so step 12 is, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. And the first reading is a paragraph on page 89. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much as ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when all other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when all others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on a new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequently, contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. This is CB.
Hi, my name is CB Peterson. I'm an alcoholic.
Thanks, CB.
I'm very thankful that you invited me to be here. I haven't done this kind of a format before, so I find it really interesting and really great. Thank you. So I'm supposed to talk about how this affected me. I got sober in 1987 in Kona, Hawaii. And I went to AA because I wanted to get the heat off at home. And I didn't get sober right away. I came in on the 24th of February, and I didn't get sober till the 28th of October. I love the people. I thought you were the most bizarre lot I'd ever seen. And I could not believe that you were talking about some of the things that you were talking about. I asked a woman to sponsor me, and she said no. And I was just crushed. Little did I know, and this is God's plan for me, the second lady I asked to sponsor me, Ruth, I wanted mothering. She was older. I thought, well, you know, this is going to be fun. And She was a kick-ass sponsor. I did not get away with the thing. But what I loved about her is during those 8 months that I drank, she never didn't answer the phone. She never told me I was a horrible person. She just waited. One day she came up and kissed me on the lips, and I thought, Jesus, is that what they do in these movies? She was seeing if I'd been drinking. Surprised I was, you know. I always went to meetings drunk, and I didn't hear the music, and I didn't get sober, and I almost died during that eight-month period. I compared myself out. I didn't listen to the similarities, but I just loved the people because they were so bizarre. And after I got sober, she said, of course you love alcoholics. They're the same people you used to drink with, only now they're sober. So I kept on coming. And as I said, I almost died to get here, but thank you God I'm here. Everything has worked out. That's another story. I'm going to talk about the 12 step. Anyhow, when I got out of treatment, she yanked me into service. I had been around long enough. I knew people by name. I knew where there was only one meeting, and she had me help her set up on Wednesdays. There was a fellow named Dan F., and I never forget this because I felt so useful about it. But maybe I was sober a month after I got out of treatment, and all he did was talk about Jimi Hendrix and the purple haze and nothing about recovery, and I'm not learning anything. And she said, wait a minute here. Your job is not to learn from him. Your job is to welcome the newcomer that comes in behind you. They don't know if you've been here a month, 10 minutes. All they're going to see is a smiling face. And that made me feel good. So I was the most welcoming person you've ever seen in your life. I welcomed everybody, but I felt good. After 3 months, she had me, not because I was any great shakes, I became the secretary for the Kailua Kona group because I had good handwriting. And they needed a secretary, and I could write. So by then I'd stopped shaking and I could write. So I got into service right away. I set a meeting up, and there were a lot of street people there, and I used to think to myself, as there were some really scary people, I don't want to die from their disease, but you know, my own is bad enough. But anyhow, I got through all that, and it made me feel useful, and I got to see people come in, and I got to see the lights go on in their eyes. She used to make me say, I love you, CB, which I do to my sponsees, put it on a mirror, and say that every morning, and I was like this for a while. But I could see my face changing, and I can see it in the newcomers that come in when their lights go on. So for me, that's how I first felt useful in carrying the message. I only had a little time. I had some knowledge, but I didn't get much because when I was as drunk as I was, this is a little to the side, there's a fellow, Kevin, every time I go back to Kona, he said, you know, we could smell you coming. I thought I would. You know, I can tell people that don't know that Listerine is 29% alcohol, and if you drink that on top of the vodka to kill your breath, you're just getting more drunk. So that did not work, and they could smell me coming. But I'm so glad no one ever shut the door on me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Phyllis. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Phyllis.
Hey, Phyllis.
So many things I could say here. Kind of talking about early times, I think I'll reflect on that a little bit. When I came in, I don't know, there's kind of like I came in and I came in again and I came in again, and so a little different experience at the different times. But of course, like CB was talking about, I wanted to compare myself out. So I just had a little more coolness to pursue, you know, like AA was just not cool enough somehow when I first came around. That was in 1979, and my sobriety date is April 15th of 1982, so you can see it took me a little bit of time to make the transition. I didn't want to be in a group where people were going to be what I considered in my face, so I went to groups, and I now kind of had this transformed view of groups where, let's just say that the message is in there, but it's not super clear in there. You know, it's kind of like, for me, I wanted to go places that reminded me of bars, but they were AA. It was a transition, you know. It kind of like, they talk about harm reduction in some of these drug programs. That was kind of like, my phase of you know, but what was happening is eventually I did stop drinking, and so it wasn't working so well just being there, because as we know from what the book tells us, I have an illness and it's progressive, and if I'm not drinking, I'm feeling the results of that illness without having it treated by working the steps. So I was getting crazier and crazier. And so the groups that were a little less crazy themselves, in the sense of, you know, people getting up and down and sideways and da da da, I asked this woman to sponsor me, and it turns out I was around her a little bit. She was crazier than I was. And, you know, like, oh dear. I didn't even know what it really meant. But there, every now and then I'd accidentally go to one of these meetings where it was like this, you know, everybody's sitting and facing the front, and, you know, they're just cheerful and smiling, and they would say things like, wow, my life was a mess, and I did these things that my sponsor said, and I did what my peers in the group were doing, and wow, things are getting really better. And that began to sound pretty good, instead of, ooh, you terrible, you know, smiling, big teeth people, leave me alone. You know? Like, it was sort of like, you know, I'm getting real tired, you know, maybe I could put my pack down in here a little bit. But then, so I had been not drinking for a while and not going to meetings, so you can imagine how I was really in need of help, but I didn't want to say so, you know. I guess they could kind of assume it, but they put me to work like CB was talking about. So I finally went to the group. I brought a newcomer from one of those meetings, because I just, you know, I know the deal. I'm bringing a newcomer to the meeting. Newcomer didn't stay, but I did and got the sponsor. And so again, you know, the doing the steps and getting the service commitments and watching what other people were doing and trying to join in with all of that, and having, to me, it's so important now, you know, because I had become suicidal before I went there. See, that was like, you know, what made it look good was, well, I don't want to die. And last house on the block scenario. But I watched people putting their huge amounts of time and effort into being there for newcomers. I mean, letting them sleep on their couches and driving people here and there. And so I wanted, now I did think they were cool, and I wanted to be like the cool kid. So what was cool was to be of service and get really, really involved and just do all of these things. So I actually spent, that was in California, I spent a number of years there and doing that. I sponsored some women, and about 10 years of sobriety, this sort of wave hit of people who had had an experience with starting in the beginning of the book and going through and reading, you know, the title page and having an experience with everything very specifically in here. And my sponsor wanted to do that with me. And when I did that, a lot of things that had been sort of, they were great experiences that I had. I do not discount any of the experiences I had. But what started to happen was that rather than kind of stumbling along like, okay, well, this seems like I'm in a good direction here, all of a sudden everything just came into focus. You know, like, why are we here in these meetings? Well, what does it say in here? It says we're here to carry the message, like it says right there. So when I'm in a meeting, that's what I'm supposed to do. And when I'm carrying the message to a sponsee, you know, like, if they choose to have this, then we will work the steps together. And as it advises here, you know, try not to get all self-willed about it. I had a really exciting experience with doing the steps out of the book the first time. I mean, all of the things that were happening with the inventory and, you know, the spiritual awakening, I had this huge, huge experience. And so I kind of did a little bit of this, you know, and so that's a phase, and I'm still deeply moved and committed to this kind of life and doing these actions, but I can kind of see that it's more of an attraction thing rather than me sort of cornering somebody and deciding that I'm going to fix them. They tend to wiggle away. or I get involved in very, very, you know, like, way out there kind of stuff. Like it says here, perhaps you are not acquainted with any drinkers who want to recover, but see, I think that I can help you recover. I'm going to trick you into doing this. So I've learned that, you know, at a kind of embarrassingly long number of years of sobriety, I've done a few things like that. But I had many years of kind of just feeling a little incomplete and always a little bit like there was something going on. There's a book that's been published in the last few years. It goes something like this. Are my friends hanging out without me and other concerns? And there's always that little, is there something over here that I'm not, it's like I just wasn't quite feeling whole somehow. And having this way of doing things with sponsees and such a clear message and such a track to run on and going to meetings, and this is my purpose in meetings to carry this, that's really the answer. You know, like it's not going and finding a new friend or going and finding out where the social things are happening or, you know, trying to be with these people. It's, you know, where are the people that are looking for a clear message and then carrying that. And then it's like I get what I am looking for by giving it. And it's just that simple. And how do they hide it in here? You know, it's like it can be hidden for quite some time. Anyway, I pass.
Thank you. All right. Next, we're going to start on page 91. It's about to say the top of 91. I don't know why I think everything's on the top of the page. All right, so this is, I did it last week too. See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. At a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to talk of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on it, on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If the mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. And CB and ladies, we have plenty of time left, so feel free to elaborate or tell any stories you like.
Okay. Well, I wanted to be really sober, and I was married to a practicing alcoholic when I got out of treatment, and I couldn't get him sober, and it just pissed me off. I was so crazed with if I'm just the perfect example, the idiot will get it. And of course, I didn't have that power. And he never did. And for three and a half years, I stayed in that marriage. And then one day, I just stepped out in faith and left. And I don't know what in my life, but my life was beginning to turn around because my first sponsor, and I do this too, made me meet with her once a week. And we got right into the book. So she'd say, well, go home and read a paragraph. I thought it was the most boring thing I'd ever read in my life. That's why I think it's the beauty of sitting down one-on-one with somebody and going through it, because I was too messed up to understand it. Now I just think it's brilliant. Then I just thought, I want to be really sober, and I'm going to do what she says because I want her to love me. And she loved me anyhow. But I finally kind of got it. I've had some really interesting experiences carrying the message. You can't go up to the head of the PTA and say, you know, last night I smoked some hash and then I drank Tuaca, and then, you know, doesn't everybody throw up and sleep with their head in the toilet in Hawaii right there because it's nice and cool in a hot place? But I can say it in the jail, you know, the girl's going, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, everybody understands that. So that, for me, some of those things I did that, you mean you're going to tell that in public? Well, yeah, because what I did, you know, I can laugh at myself now. I was way too serious when I got here. And it was the shame. The steps have allowed me to shed the shame. So, and I'll tell the girls right away, here, if you want me to sponsor you, this is what you're going to get. This is some of the stuff I did. The things that when I did my first four-step that I went to the marriage counselor because she was bound by her oath not to tell. And then my sponsor at the end said, all right, what haven't you told me? I thought, how does she know? You know, they told. But that's what I do to the girls I sponsor. But that has indeed become a valuable tool. When I drank and the phone rang, I had a little trick. If I could say ashtray, I could answer the phone and say hello. But if it came out ashtray, I couldn't answer the phone. And most people don't walk to their telephone saying ashtray, ashtray, ashtray. I didn't think a thing was wrong with that. Most people don't invite the Mormon missionaries in to have a little cocktail with them. And then have to hide with the blinds drawn for 2 weeks as they came every day. I'd have to hide in my closet. And they knew I was home. I'm sure my car was there, but I didn't know. So that kind of stuff now is funny, you know, but it made sense to me. And I'll tell you one more thing for the humor part. At the very end of my drinking, we sold our house and we were building a house and we moved into this town condo. And it was clean when we moved in. Well, the Kirby man came and wanted to show me the Kirby. And I thought, well, God, you know, I'm kind of lonely here. Let the little guy in and let him show me. So he's vacuuming away and I'm thinking to myself, $430, huh? It's got a zipper bag. I can put a bottle of vodka in that, the ex will never find it, and he never did. That made sense to me. So I can get attention by telling that story, because, you know, I thought Alcoholics Anonymous was nothing but doom, gloom, and I'll never laugh again. And I have laughed till I thought I was going to die in these days. So, but what I do, so I try and lighten it up when I meet with somebody. God uses me as a sponsor. He's always my higher power God, which I might digress a little bit, because I always ask who I'm sponsoring, do you have a God in your life, or do we have to go looking? Because I don't want to turn you off, and then I explain spirituality and religion. But for me, I use the ocean. I thought God was for old people that were going to die anyhow and had to atone for their sins, and they were only going to church so they didn't have to go to hell. And I knew I was going to hell, so I just didn't even care. So I was able to find a God in these rooms. I don't know, I got a little sidetracked there. But it's when you're, but so God uses me with a lot of women. I've done the district in the past. My first sponsor started Intergroup in Kona, and I don't do well there. I do well woman to woman. And I love the ladies in AA. I like the men too. But I love the women that I sponsor. I think they enrich my life beyond anything I can. It's indescribably wonderful. I love that part where it says we're people who ordinarily wouldn't mix, but there exists a fellowship that's indescribably wonderful. That's how I feel about the women I sponsor. So I don't know, I just try and tell them a little bit about me, and then I ask them about them. I'll meet them one and one. I just have a new sponsee. When I say I can't take anybody else, and then somebody will show up. Not because I'm any great shakes, it's just because I haven't drank and died, so I'm just around. But in the beginning in Kona, once I had a year, there weren't very many women. I was 46 years old when I got sober. So I had a lot of requests. The first five women, once I had a year, I had to wait for a year because I would be carrying my ego instead of the book, which very clearly pointed out to me, although I talk to everybody because I'm friendly. But they all got drunk, and I knew I was a failure. And it was like, oh God, I failed. And I was on the phone to my sponsor every day. You know, what'll I tell her? What'll I do? She said, you know, just ask God for good orderly direction. It's going to be okay. Finally, somebody stuck. And but that's, after all these years, I think that's how God uses me in an Alcoholics Anonymous. But I've had the pleasure of, in Kona, you couldn't go to the jail or the treatment center, but you could go to the hospital. We were on a call list, and we were on a hotline. We get these calls all the time. I remember this lady called me at 10 o'clock at night. And she lived in Waimea, which was an hour away. I want you to come here now. You people are supposed to be friendly. Here's my phone number. Call me in the morning. Don't ever hear from her again. But I realized that it wasn't a failure, that I'm just the guide, you know. I learned how to ask questions in here. If I can't handle something, I'm burning Phyllis's wires up until I can answer whatever it is. But I used to go to, Dick and I, my husband's in the recovery too, and we used to go to the DUI class at the Kona courthouse, and he'd always say, y'all aren't in here because you ate too many Whoppers at Burger King, you know. And I'm thinking, That's right. You know, you're in here because you have a threefold disease. And when I was in treatment, the doctor told me, he said, look at it this way. You have an allergy to ethyl alcohol or ethyl alcohol. If you were allergic to, were you ever allergic to anything? I said, yeah, when I was a kid, I couldn't eat zucchini. I broke out in hives, which is fine. I didn't like zucchini when I was a kid. So he said, well, you didn't eat it, did you? Well, you have an allergic reaction to alcohol, the properties of alcohol, plus you have the allergy, plus you have the spiritual lack and the craving. And that made it okay for me. Having an allergy made it okay for me to be an alcoholic. So I kind of start them out, like Phyllis said, with a preface, but it very much, I love the doctor's opinion where it tells me about the threefold nature of my disease. So I've kind of been doing the same thing for the last 26 and a half years. I sponsored the way I was sponsored. Anything I ever want is in that book or at the end of a telephone call. It's just up to me to research it or to call. And I can't tell you how grateful I am. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. It saved my life, but I've got great joy here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Oh, thank you.
And funny.
Says funny.
Okay. Now, let's see. I want to talk about not moralizing or lecturing, but sharing experience. Try not to moralize or lecture. I'm tempted at times, you know. I was listening to a tape the other day of Chris R., who's one that I'd really like to listen to from time to time, and I like his clarity, talking about how what, as we said earlier, the purpose of meetings is to share our experience, strength, and hope. And it's so easy to get just a little bit off track, you know, just a little bit, just a little social or a little, I don't know, something, thinking about things other than what's the real problem here? You know, what's going to really help this person, you know, like if you take away all of the other things, what we're really saying is, if you're one of us, you need to find a relationship with a higher power, and our job is to show you how we did that and see if you would like to do that, because we can give you all of our experience, we could even sort of give you advice maybe, but that's not really what this is about. This is about showing you how to, if you will have it, have a spiritual awakening, which will solve your problem. And it's just that simple. So I really just like going through the book with folks, and it's really been a pleasure to watch people. You know, I'm not the most patient person in the world a lot of times. You know, I don't feel like I'm much of a drunk whisperer, or I don't know. Sometimes I just don't know what to say, you know, I just think, you know, they're just not even listening. And, you know, but given time, and this is even not you.
Oh,
but
thank you.
People that I've sponsored for a while, you know, I think, wow, what's wrong with them? You know, like, come on, shape up. But, you know, I pray about it and show some patience and just love, you know, and things have a longer trail sometimes than I might think, you know, like, and why was I thinking that in the first place? Maybe it was like, well, maybe it would make me look better if they would, I mean, you know, just crazy stuff like that. But I just have to keep coming back to that it's not me carrying the message. It's not me even helping the person. It's me having had an experience and being with other people that have had this experience and just trying to share how to have that and how to expand on that and how to continue it if you already have had it. And there's really not a lot else to say. You know, like, I mean, the path of the steps is to clean up the past and then, you know, carry the message on to the next person and continue to keep the past cleaned up. So let's see, what else do I want to say? Here's the next thing that I've been reflecting about. Like, why do I go to the meetings I go to? Why do I have the sponsor I have? Why do I cherish certain friends and certain kinds of groups that I go to? And I'm not trying to say there's like these groups and those groups, but I you know, because I have gone to all different kinds of meetings and groups and things like that. But what I found is that I am not one of these people that can do a little of this and a little of that and go to a few meetings and maybe one a week or, you know, that kind of thing. You know, it just doesn't work for me. I know people that seem to be okay doing that, but it's just not my path. It just doesn't work for me. I need to kind of be in the middle with commitments, you know, sponsoring people, trying to work the steps, trying to stay active and frequent activity with others, like it talks about in the book. And I need people around me who are doing that too, because just every now and then there's this little sense of self-pity, like, gee, you're doing a lot. You know, you could stay home tonight, you could rest, you know, or like, well, what about these other people? What they're doing or what they're not doing, you know? But if I'm around the people that are doing a lot, they're getting the results, and I'm encouraged to keep doing that myself. And I felt like I wanted to die once, and a little bit of thoughts of that here and there along the way, but just somewhere inside of me, I can't even really express it, but it's like I just know that this is where the very essence of staying alive and having a good life is, doing this stuff. And I'm just so grateful that I found people to really hang out with, you know, a bunch of us in Gloucester and a bunch of friends in Richmond and here and there and all around and kind of even out west. And, you know, we're going to go to Atlanta next summer and yeah. Be a bunch of them there. We'll be in Williamsburg in August and be a bunch of them there. Yay! It's just like the best. So I think that's all I want to say right now. Just now that I've tasted the good life, I guess you could say, I don't want to make it sound like I'm trying to be, I'm a perfectionist or anything like that. It's just, I know what works for me to keep me not just living, but thriving. And I'm so just grateful to have found the ability to share that with other folks and hang out. So I pass.
Thanks, Alice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. So the next paragraph we have, I believe, is at the bottom of page 91, and it starts, when he sees you know all about the drinking game, commence to describe yourself as an alcoholic. Tell him how baffled you were, how you finally learned that you were sick. Give him an account of the struggles you made to stop. Show him the mental twist which leads to the first drink of the spree. We suggest you do this as we have done it in the chapter on alcoholism. If he is an alcoholic, he will understand you at once. He will match your mental inconsistencies with some of his own. If you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, then begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show him from your experience how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of the willpower. Don't, at this stage, refer to this book unless he has seen it and wishes to discuss it. And be careful not to brand him as an alcoholic. Let him draw his own conclusions. If he sticks to the idea that he can still control his drinking, tell him that he possibly can, if he is not too alcoholic. But insist that if he is severely afflicted, there may be little chance he can recover by himself.
Okay. And I really identify with this. I grew up in an alcoholic home, and I swore that I wouldn't do that to my kids. And I didn't drink. I got drunk once in high school, and I was deathly ill. And I never drank again until I was around 28 or 29 years old. And I had a wonderful time. I love to drink, and I had gotten married at 17, and I had all this responsibility growing up in the alcoholic home. You never knew. There was this sense of impending doom, or what's going to happen. My parents were divorced. What is she going to do today? And yet, I was powerless over not doing that to my kids, too. What really scares me is they thought they had a fun childhood, and I'm thinking, oh my God, if they only knew. Because it's a progressive disease, and I didn't start since I'd had them all by the time I was 21, except for the last one, I kind of grew up with the kids, so it didn't progress till I was in my late 30s. And one day, I couldn't stop, and I tried probably 4 years before I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous to stop on my own. And I kept thinking, everything else is working. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do it. I was throwing up every morning and drinking, quarts are bigger than fifths, so I was buying quarts of vodka. And then when the ex-husband told me I drank too much, I thought, watch this, you dick, and I just bought a thing. So stuck it up on top of the refrigerator, one of those, what do they call it, a jar bomb or something, this huge bottle of vodka. And I just drank it warm, you know, and who wants to mess around with guys? But I can tell you that I hated myself. I was powerless to stop. I didn't want to do what I was doing. I didn't want to be ashamed all the time. And I didn't know anything about, you know, that the can't have just one drink. It made a lot of sense to me afterwards. I never did one of everything. And it's just like my throttle get pushed on and there it stayed. And I had no knowledge. All I knew was that I didn't want to be like my mom, and I outdid her. And although I felt like I was a little better at concealing what I did. I don't know. You know, and I have two alcoholic daughters. One's been sober 14 years, and the other one needs this desperately. So, you know, I don't know. It's a family disease. I knew nothing about the family disease. The doctor told me in treatment that both parents, which mine were alcoholic. I had about 80% of turning out that way. Had I known what was in store for me, maybe I wouldn't have had that first drink, and maybe I would have. I don't know. I like a good time. I like it a lot better sober. I don't want to ever forget those last 4 years where it was hell. But had I not had that experience, I wouldn't enjoy my life, I don't think, the way it is today. And had I not had those experiences, I couldn't get attention of the girls in the jail. I tell them, you know, God didn't throw you on the floor and sit on your shoulders and pry open your mouth and pour down vodka or stick that needle in your arm. You did it yourself. I was blaming everybody else. Of course, if you were married to him, you'd drink like I do, too. I'm under so much pressure at work. I weigh too much. Oh, my hair's falling out, you know. Well, if I drank, I didn't feel, you know. How do you feel, CB? I haven't a clue how I felt. I hadn't felt anything except despair and shame or anger for years. But When I talk to people like that, I can see people going, you know, I had those same feelings. I learned to identify the feelings, so I'm not afraid to share some of that stuff with a newcomer. One time, this doctor was in the program in Kona that was head of the hospital drunks, and every time he'd call for a 12-step visit. So one day he called, and the rule is always take two people. And I thought, well, it's a hospital. I'm safe here, you know, it's a hospital. So I go up and I go to see this woman, and she could have gotten out of the bed and pulled out the tube. She would have thrown me out of the room. Who told you I was here? What are you doing here? I get a call from the head of the hospital. Mrs. So-and-so said that you came in the room. Thank God Dr. McClure had sent me, so it was okay. But that's really the only time I've ever not been at least listened to. You know, and I think you kind of have to pick what you're gonna say. In the beginning, I wanted to bleed all over everybody. I wanted you to know all about me so you didn't have to be like me and you didn't have to suffer like I did. And you know, I forgot all about that God has a plan and a timeline for everybody. But I don't wanna forget that. So all of my trying on my own to stop was for naught. I couldn't pull it off. I think when I first went to AA and I had it all figured out, in Kona they say anybody in their first, second, or third day of sobriety, but if you came in 5 minutes late, you didn't have to raise your hand. So I had that one figured out, you know. But I stayed just sicker than ever. So I really got it, that it's not a question of willpower, that I cannot, once I take a drink, stop. And I had no higher power to turn the desire to drink over to, and nobody to call out and to tell on myself. When I was drinking, I would call my sponsor, "Have you been drinking?" "No." You know, I love Cops. I watch Cops. "How much have you had to drink?" "Two beers." That was my one. I don't know why you're so mad at me. I've only had 2 beers. So, you know, that I've been there and done that. I think the beauty in 12-stepping is you've been there and you've done that. They can't scam you. I tried really hard to scam everybody when I was drinking, and they knew. So I think the honesty, I was able to get some honesty by working the steps. And as I said, there's great joy for me to work with other women in AA. I'm married to an alcoholic who I met at a AA meeting in Kona, and he lived 2,500 miles away, but we put higher power first, AA second, and the marriage third, because if we don't have the first two, we're certainly not going to have a marriage. And it doesn't work if you stand on the stairs like this and go, "What part of step 10 aren't you working when you're wrong, properly admitted it?" That's not carrying a good message. So, but you know, but I think common peril, common solution. And so if I'm able to tell you, "Yes, I did this, yes, I understand," then I'm able to be helpful.
Okay, great, again.
Thank you.
All right. So I think for me, I have to be really careful to not want the program for someone more than they want it. Mm-hmm. It's a tendency that I have, you know. So I also look at it that I'll learn from it. I might think to myself, "Well, you know, you're sober this amount of time. You know, how could you not see that was happening?" You know, I just kind of have to laugh it off, like, okay. So a couple of people have kind of wrapped me around their finger. Let's see, when was that? Last one, it was about 6 or 7 years ago, I think, something like that, you know. Something that I would like to think that I might have done my first couple of years doing 12-step work. So it's just a matter of being willing. Here's one thing that I've talked to people about, and I don't know, it's, I guess we'll put it under willingness. When I first started sponsoring people, I would feel a little disappointed. You know, I worked with somebody and it didn't work out, and so I'd kind of withdraw, like, "Oh, didn't work out." And then I got to the point where it'd be okay. You know, that's not it. So I would pray and say something along the lines of, "Okay, I'm willing to sponsor somebody or carry the message or whatever, just kind of like show me what to do, or, you know, like when it's time," that kind of thing. And I've shared that prayer with a couple of people, because every time I've prayed that prayer, it's either been the next day or within a week or something like that. You know, it's interesting how being ready and willing is a key for this, being ready to carry the message. So my way, I guess, you know, I'm thinking about how they're talking about this here. I basically, if I'm going to sit down with somebody and talk about it, I really use the early part of the book, mm-hmm. you know, and talk about the mental obsession a lot about the mental obsession. Like for me, I realized a couple of years ago that I think I had the mental obsession before I even drank. Because I began to think about it, like other people were doing it. Oh, you know, my dad was an alcoholic. I didn't want to be him. I swore I wasn't going to be him until I was 19 and went to college. And when I was 18 in college, I didn't drink. And then all these other people were drinking. And then pretty soon it started to occur to me, it looks like they're having some fun. you know, and I could use a little relief here. And so the next time they invite me down, I'm going. And so, of course, my first time out, I never thought of drinking as we're having a barbecue and, oh, by the way, a couple of beers. You know, it was always drinking was the event. You know, like, let's go get wasted, let's go have five pitchers of beer, let's, you know, those were the people I wanted to hang out with. So my mental obsession was, gee, let's go get a little bit crazy and drink. Like, that was the idea of what drinking was, and it's never been any different. When I was drinking, I never really tried too hard to moderate. So sharing that with people, and then, you know, getting them to talk about how is their drinking, you know, or how was their, you know, like mental obsession. Okay, so knowing, all right, so when you lost control, which, how many times did you lose control, really? Let's think about that. Like, did you lose control when you drank? How often? A lot? Every time? You know, that kind of thing. For me, pretty much yes. For them, you know, whatever they say. And then knowing that you had these experiences and these bad times with it, did you stop? You know, can you stop? Could you stop now, knowing what you know about it? And that's, I believe they're talking about here, like, somebody may not just immediately identify with that, but, you know, have a little patience with it. And, you know, like it says here, talk to them about how, if somebody really does have that, you know, maybe you're not so sure, but if you do have that, it's not something to take lightly, because it's, like it says here, it's a fatal illness. And then kind of, you know, see what happens. I have to remind myself that it's not what I think should happen, or when it should happen, or how it should happen, or with whom it should happen, or anything like that. It's just, my job is to go do this thing with the person, and then we'll just see what happens. And over the long period of time, even people that I started to work with and it didn't work out with them, I've been blessed to see them get somebody else's response, or you know, they go away, they come back. Somewhere in the writing here, it talks about how it's just such a blessing to watch this happen to people. And one of my very favorite things is sitting in fifth steps with folks. You know, it begins to get funny and wonderful and magic. And anyway, but I can't say that I've ever come home from doing 12-step work with anyone just feeling like self-obsessed and awful. You know, it's always like, now what was that I was worried about? So anyway, whether each time works, doesn't work, whether it fits my idea of it, it's never in vain. I guess that's what I want to say. All right, so I pass.
Absolutely. Thank you. So we're going to continue on the bottom paragraph on page 92. Continue to speak of alcoholism as an illness, a fatal malady. Talk about the conditions of the body and the mind which accompany it. Keep his attention focused mainly on your personal experience. Explain that many are doomed who will never realize their predicament. Doctors are rightly loath to tell alcoholic patients the whole story unless it will serve them some good purpose. But you may talk to him about the hopelessness of alcoholism because you offer a solution. You will soon have your friend admitting he has many, if not all, of the traits of the alcoholic. If his doctor is willing to tell him that he is alcoholic, so much the better. Even though your protege may not have entirely admitted his condition, he has become very curious to know how you got well. Let him ask you the question, if he will. Tell him exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the man be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that he does not have to agree with your conception of God. He can choose any conception he likes, provided it makes sense to him. The main thing is that he be willing to believe in a power greater than himself, and that he live by spiritual principles. When dealing with such a person, you had better use everyday language to describe spiritual principles. There is no use arousing any prejudice he may have against certain theological terms and conceptions about which he may already be confused. Don't raise such issues, no matter what your own convictions are. CB?
Thank you. I kind of touched on that, but how I felt about the church thing. But one of the things about 12-step work is sometimes I think, I'm going to say this, and then what comes out of my mouth is so much better than I ever thought of saying. I can remember the first time that happened, and I thought I kind of stepped out of sight of myself and watched this happen, and I thought, that's what crazy people do. They separate from themselves. Although I was capable of doing that with certain intoxicants. But that thing about the part about the doctors being loath to tell them, it's been my experience that the doctors don't always know. So I stress when I'm working with people, no, you can't take Xanax because you quit drinking vodka. You have to, this is a deal where you're not going to take anything so you can find out who you are, you know. So that's given me some, fortunately, General Service puts out the pamphlets that are very helpful for that kind of a thing. If they ask me, I'm very happy to tell them. I remember when I came in and this girl came up to me and said, hi, my name is Vera, and I'm going to love you till you learn to love yourself, and went to hug me, and I thought, don't touch me, bitch, you know, just get your hands off of me, because I wasn't a hugger in those days. I didn't want her touching me. And but I've learned in here to be without the screen of vodka between me and you, I'm an okay person. I wasn't okay when I first got here. I had to get rid of everything. And I also had to find the spiritual solution. What I'll do sometimes is I love the water. To me, it's very healing. Today, I have a God of my understanding that's way bigger than my explanation. If I try and define my God, I'm going to limit my God. In the beginning, I used the Pacific Ocean because I thought, well, I was willing. I was granted willingness in the treatment center. So the counselor maybe get on my knees with all these people looking at me, and I said, you're not getting up until you find a power greater than yourself. And I was called hyper compliant, and I could see the ocean out the window, and so I thought, all right, I'll use the ocean, and it worked. Okay, about 2 years into sobriety, I have now, I call my higher power God, but it took some doing. God sneaked up on me, that's all I said. But I stress this point. In the beginning I thought, well, everybody thinks like they do, like I do. They don't want to hear about God. They said the Lord's Prayer at the end of the first meeting too. I went to, I thought, I've joined a cult. Get me out of here. Because now I love the cult, but that was those days. But I basically what I tell people is just act as if. If you don't believe in God, get rid of all these punishing, you're going to go to hell if you don't do this. And I explain the difference between spirituality and religion. And I've learned how to do that through having it explained to me. And the other thing I'll do, and I'll turn it over to Phyllis, is there's two things. If people are having trouble with God, if it's summertime, I just say, lay down, smell the earth. Did you make that? No, you know? You can kind of duplicate it, but that's around, or feel the breeze. You blow in that breeze? No, the breeze is there. We're breathing it in and out because of it. So there's different tacks I take to help people find a power greater than themselves. I love it when they come in believing in God. That makes my job pretty easy. But anyhow, I learned it all in here. Thank you.
Thank you. We have about a couple minutes left.
Couple minutes.
Sorry.
Okay. Well, one of my favorite, you just reminded me of that when you were talking about a higher power. I seem to have had a lot of folks over the last few years that are pretty okay with higher power. Every now and then, though, there's that, you know, person who really doesn't want to do that. And that was kind of me, actually, in the beginning. I've been sober a while, and I was just thinking about it on the way down here. Like, for sure, 3 out of 5 sponsors I've had told me the same thing, which was, you think, me, that if you can't figure out a problem with your intellect, that there's no answer to it. And I found this phrase in We Agnostics that says something about, you know, we really liked intellect and we really loved using it. And in fact, we had faith in our ability to think. Abject, I mean, like utter, complete, like kind of faith in that. So if you could have that kind of faith in that, and it's really not serving you so well, really, is it? So maybe you could just kind of like move that over here a little bit, you know, and have a little faith in the unseen, because you're really good at it. You're really good at it over here. Maybe you could just kind of like, it's over here just a little bit. And that has helped me a lot. I remember reading that, you know, and I've read that a zillion times, but about 3 years ago, I read that and I went, oh, wow. I really understand what they're saying there. So I guess that would be my sharing with someone on that. Like, but I haven't run into anybody that's really a tough case with that lately. Not, I've run into some guys, but I don't know that it's my job to, you know. But you'll hear people, you know, like, I don't like that God stuff. You don't have to call it God. It can be, you know, like CB said, whatever works for you, higher power. I know that it isn't my thinking intellect. You know, that is not the power that I need. So that's all I'm going to say.
Thank you. And speaking of Thy Will Be Done, I have to apologize. I kind of prompted you with the suggestion that we had plenty of time, and that was when I thought we had 3 excerpts and not 6. So so I'm going to finish up just the last 2 excerpts, and then I guess if you had any burning desire to comment on that, we could. On page 94, outline the program of action, explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you are now endeavoring to be helpful to him. It is important for him to realize that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital role in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. Make it plain he is under no obligation to you, and that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he places the welfare of others ahead of his own. Make it clear that he is not under pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you have helped him. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you have perhaps made a friend. Maybe you have disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions. And then we'll follow up with page 69. Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you have to offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced that he cannot recover by himself. To spend too much time on any one situation is to deny another alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. One of our fellowship failed entirely with his first half dozen prospects. He often says that if he had continued to work on them, he might have deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance. So I thank you. And again, if we have maybe a couple minutes. Okay. So now we're going to pass the seventh tradition basket. And if I can get to the seventh tradition. The seventh tradition states that while every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local office services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, which is to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contributions is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. And, excuse me, now we'll open the floor for any announcements, AA-related announcements. Johnny?
Hi, Johnny.
Hi, Johnny. Thank you. Yeah. Hey, Danny.
I'm having a first kind of workshop Saturday, August 30th. Put it in your calendars. It's going to be great. We're going to have run. You can bring a dish if you wish. It's going to be a potluck. That's 11 to 2 on Saturday, August 30th at 124 West Freemason Street in downtown.
My name is Charlotte. I'm an alcoholic.
Yes, Charlotte.
The same group that Johnny was talking about, my home group, Cornerstone, is celebrating their second anniversary Saturday, August 2nd. We meet in this church. This summer we're meeting in one of the houses, but for that night we will be back in the church down the hall. It's luau themed. We're going to have potluck, so you can bring a dish if you wish. And it starts at 6, and then at 7, Kay from Norfolk will be speaking.
All right, thank you.
Thanks.
Yep, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, Dave.
See if you mentioned the Virginia Area Convention, which is August 8th, 10th at the DoubleTree Kings Mill in Williamsburg. If you go to aavirginia.org and go to the calendar for August, you can download the flyer and the registration information. Again, that's August 8th to 10th in Williamsburg, aavirginia.org. Thanks.
All right, thank you. And anybody else? I too am so excited that I'm about to burst for my home group. This one you're sitting in, Simple Actions. We're having a supper and a speaker meeting here on the 28th. Eating begins at 6 p.m. and the speaker is Will Beebe from Richmond, speaking at 7 p.m. And that's going to be the 28th right here. Bring a dish if you wish, and there are plenty of blue flyers, so please take those and scatter them around the area. So, Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Would home group members please raise their hand? All right. And newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd just like to welcome you. Oh, all right. So we do have the literature table over there. We have big books for sale, excuse me. And anything that folds is free. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like to be, or like additional information on sponsorship here at this home group, we have a man and a woman come to the front. And you can, they'll be available for you to ask questions after the meeting. And I forget who is on the table tonight. Do we? All right, Catherine and Jason over there will be over here if you have any sponsorship questions. So please don't leave here without a sponsor if you're shopping around. In closing, if we could just please thank CB and Phyllis for coming out tonight. You guys were wonderful. Thank you. We really enjoyed it. And after we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. You're all welcome to the meeting after the meeting, which is held at a wonderful little cantina named Plaza del Sol, right up the street with the most beautiful paintings, wall murals you'll ever see, and just homemade tortillas, and it's beautiful. Come out for fellowship, please. Save my life. So can I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? All right, Michelle. It's all good.
I let it. I'm Charlotte. I'm still an alcoholic.
Hey, Charlotte.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we only know a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thank you. So here we'd like to close with the Lord's Prayer. You join us.
That was awesome. Thank you so much. I'll never forget that. I just want to be more. It's a big group. It is.
Who keeps us sober?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.